Hello, everyone. Lee Arnold back with you for another edition of Country Music Conversations. This week, we'll be visiting with a gentleman who's continued to carry the torch for traditional country music, John Anderson. But before we start this conversation, here are a few words from our sponsor. Country Music Conversations with Lee Arnold's podcast is made possible by our sponsor, MarketSmith, Inc., the digital media agency that's been growing brands like Tumi, SharkNinja, New Jersey Lottery, PSE&G, Blue Mercury Cosmetics, and Dick's Sporting Goods. You know what makes this agency so good at what they do? Because simply being a marketing agency is no longer enough. Solution-based, problem-solving, and ever-evolving, they create enduring value for DTC and B2B brands by opening up and growing marketing channels. Their patented AI offerings, informed by human intelligence, allow them to act with agility and intellect. I was speaking with the CEO not too long ago, and she was saying they take on clients who know who they are, who want to grow, and clients that know what they want. These big brands choose MarketSmith because they want to merge with a partner who'll make them exceptional and an agency that will grow their revenue. Digital marketing is not easy, but MarketSmith, Inc. knows when to make the media dollars work hard for their clients. You have a brand you want to grow? Well, contact MarketSmith.com and tell them Lee Arnold sent you. His career has lasted more than 40 years. Since 1977, he's had more than 40 singles on the Billboard chart, including 5 number ones. He's been consistent in the recording studio with albums for different labels. To date, 27 to his credit. John was raised in Apopka, Florida, and his first musical influences were not country, but rock and roll artists such as Jimi Hendrix and the Rolling Stones. He played in a rock band when he was 15 years old, then discovered Merle Haggard and George Jones. He moved to Nashville in 1971, and he took on odd jobs during the day, including one as a roofer at the Grand Ole Opry House, while playing in the clubs at night. In 1977, he signed with Warner Brothers Records. His first hit was "I've Got a Feeling Somebody's Been Stealing." He kept turning out hits through the 70s and 80s. The song "I'm Just an Old Junk of Coal" got him a Grammy nomination. His fourth album produced his signature song, "Swingin'." It became the biggest single in the history of Warner Brothers Records. As a result, at the CMAs that year, he won the Horizon Award and Single of the Year. In 1986, he and Warner Brothers parted ways. He then signed with MCA Records, released two albums, then went to Capitol Records in 1990. In 1991, he joined BNA Records, working with the legendary producer James Stroud, and releasing the album Seminole Wind. And it hit pay dirt with the single Straight Tequila Night that boosted his career. His 1993 album produced the number one single, Money in the Bank, and he continued to record for BNA until 1996 before he left the label. In 1993, John was awarded the Academy of Country Music Career Achievement Award. He was also honored by being inducted into the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame in 2014. Throughout his career, he's collaborated with different artists, including Waylon Jennings and John Rich. John lives in Smithville, Tennessee, his home for more than 30 years with his wife and two daughters. The conversation we'll be listening to took place at Jamboree in the Hills in 1985. Our conversation touched on reminiscing about his rock and roll days, stories behind hits like Old Chunk of Coal, Tokyo, Oklahoma, Swingin', and what he was looking forward to in the future. Here now is John Anderson.
Well, here he is. We finally met up with John Anderson after a long, long time. He's in St. Clairsville, Ohio at Jamboree in the Hills. Good to see you, John.
Likewise, Lee. It's certainly a pleasure to see you, and it's good seeing you again. It has been a while, really.
Yeah. I'll tell you, it's been a long time, but so much has happened between the time we've seen each other with hit records and more successes in country music. When I think of John Anderson, I think of someone who really had roots in country originally. Then, because of his age and because of growing up, got identified and liked and played rock and roll like most kids do. Then came back to the roots again after maturity evolved. And when maturity evolved and you came back to the roots, you really came back to the roots. I don't know of anybody who personifies what we call traditional country music or the feel of traditional country music, combining it with contemporary approach, than you do.
Well, thank you. That's quite a compliment. Yeah, a little bit of that contemporary did rub off on us. You know, I was talking earlier about the old rock and roll days, just in, say, in junior high school and right in the first years of high school, like through the 10th grade. And after that, I did slowly just veer off and got off into George Jones and Merle Haggard. And that kind of brought me to where I am now. And like I say, there are still a few songs that maybe... could have those tendencies to go all the way back to the old rock and roll days, but I've dearly grown to love country music. It's a big part. I mean, it's my life and a big part of my family. It's all their life now.
Haggard was influenced by Lefty Frizzell, and you in turn influenced by Merle. I guess influenced by both, because there's a little bit of Hag, a little bit of Frizzell, and John Anderson, or maybe a lot.
Well, yeah, Merle was a big, big influence on me. I guess about the time I was 17 or 18, really got into some Merle Haggard records and some George Jones records. And I thought that was pretty much where I'd like to be, you know. And it's a long way from a want to, you know.
You recently had a hit, It's All Over Now, which originally was a rock and roll hit with Bobby Womack, and even the Stones did it at one time, as I recall. That was kind of a departure for you. Why'd you choose that one?
Well, just to keep from doing the same kind of records, you know. That was one of those records that I've always loved that song. And in my opinion, that song is a whole lot country. I mean, it's not such a rock and roll song that it can't be played in a good country music bar.
or anywhere else,
really. They liked it out here today.
Speaking about your hits, we're kind of reminiscing with thinking about song titles. One that really crops up in my mind is a song called 1959. There's something so nostalgic about that.
Well, that song, it's a picture song. It's one of those that I call a picture song. A lot of pictures are just in the lines and... In fact, a lot of my fans, that is a big, big requested song. So, you know, like some of my fans that are like the real dedicated ones, you know, they love the 1959.
Another one that comes to mind is that old Billy Joe Shaver classic called Old Chunk of Coal.
Oh, yeah, one of my favorite songs always. Billy Joe, of course, is truly a great writer. And when I first heard the song, I felt immediately that I should do it, you know. Within the next few days after deciding to do it, I then heard that Johnny Cash had sung it in a movie. Well, just about the time that my record got together and just about ready to come out, that movie came on TV, sure as the world, and Johnny Cash was also a big help. He said, boy, I sure am glad to see somebody cut a hit record on that song, and really helped me out a lot, and had me on his TV special, too.
That's great. John, also recently your big hit of Tokyo, Oklahoma from your brand new album was really something. The album, it departs a little bit. It's a little bit different than things you've done before, this brand new album, and the song.
Well, that song is probably the most unique song or one of the most unique, for sure, that I've recorded. It's written by Mac Vickery, who co-wrote Let Somebody Else Drive. In fact, he's got the George Strait single out, that fireman, him and Wayne Kemp. Immediately, I thought, oh, I've got to try and record that song, you know. That's the wildest song I've ever heard, and I could never, ever write a song like that myself, I don't believe. I don't have any idea where he went to write Tokyo, Oklahoma, but I don't think I can get there from here. So we had to do the song, and in turn, and of course, when we did the record, it was just almost as if you had written it yourself. I mean, you try and really relate that feeling, but it'll be wonderful to always have Tokyo, Oklahoma to fall back on.
That's a great song and a good album too. You're a writer and you've written quite a few songs in your career, John. How does writing come for you? Some people say it's probably one of the most painful experiences to sit down and write a song, particularly when it's from a personal experience.
A lot of times that can be, and on the other hand, it can be a great and a very satisfying and a happy experience. I mean, it can be fulfilling. I've written gospel songs just for myself, for instance, that not many people hear or what have you, but just the same as writing a real sad song about your first or second wife or maybe even your third or fourth one. you know, that can be sad. The same as writing a nice, happy song can be happy, you know. And fortunately, we've been able to write both kinds. And I've not written nearly as much here lately in the last 10 or 12 months as I'm fixing to be. My wife and I are just finishing a new house. And I'm going to try and find me a cubbyhole somewhere in that house and make a songwriting room out of it. And that's one of the personal promises that I've made to myself. And I'm really looking forward to giving a good new burst of songs, good new songs.
What do you think is the best song that John Anderson has written?
Well, at this point, I'll have to say Swinging, just on account of just the facts and the record sales. And, you know, that's what we're all in it for, is the record business and to make a record that everybody likes to hear, or not everybody, excuse me. There were a lot of people that didn't like it, but there were a whole lot of people that did. And I'll always enjoy singing Swinging.
Swinging was probably one of the most successful songs you've ever been associated with. It's certainly a springboard to all kinds of awards. But as you mentioned before and touched on, it was controversial there for a while.
Certainly was, as is a lot of our records, probably, as you well know, Lee, at, Tokyo, Oklahoma. Let Somebody Else Drive was very controversial. On one hand, I heard some folks say that they couldn't play the record because it was, you know, was mentioning drinking and driving, and they thought it was bad. On the other hand, I had Mothers Against Drunk Driving calling me and praising me for doing a good thing. So, as I say, it was very controversial, and sometimes it creates a position that is sometimes hard to be in.
How did you get the idea for Swinging?
Lionel Delmore, who wrote the song with me. I have to give Lionel the credit.
From the son of one of the Delmore brothers.
Yes, Alton is Lionel's father, and Lionel's a great songwriter. In fact, I believe he's got Conway Twitty's new single, Between Blue Eyes and Jean, mm-hmm. something like that, which is good for Lionel. Lionel and I are getting together and trying to write some too, some new ones.
Did the whole song come difficult when you sat down to do Swinging?
It really didn't. A lot of it, I say it didn't, and then again it did. A lot of it came right away, just fell out of the sky. But we worked and fine-tuned on that song probably for 9 months. It was just wild. And I remember finally just writing something in the middle of the studio floor that morning. On the last verse, I remember just writing and singing it off that paper, and we never did change it.
That chocolate pie line kills me, because it's so real and honest.
Yeah, that's Lionel. Again, I have to give him the credit where it's due. He played that to me. That's what got my attention. So he said, brother was on the sofa eating chocolate pie. Mama's in the kitchen cutting chicken up to fry. And I thought, Lord, how simple is that? You know, this guy has really gotten simple, and I might as well get with him, you know.
Wise choice.
I'm glad I did.
That's super. John, it's been really a great career for you, and where do you think your really place is in the future of country music? Where would you really like to be?
Well, I would like to go down as one of those people who kept going, you know, not a here and there thing. You know, I hope that in 20 years I'll still have a good career and be able to drive around in my gold Cadillac. I was just with Waylon Jennings the other afternoon.
Really?
Yeah, and I have several good friends that are, in my opinion, probably the greatest. Merle and George, John Cash are all good friends. And just someday, if I can just be in the ranks of the ones that just kept going and kept playing. In fact, we've even dropped our price just a little bit so we can start playing more. In case any of you bookers are out there listening, that now's a good time to call.
To get John at a good deal.
I don't know how long that's going to last, you know.
If them offers come in fast, it won't last very long.
They come in too fast. No telling what we'll do, but we'll do something.
I guess it really, you know, when you think about paying your dues, people don't think about all the many years that when you came to Nashville, how you struggled. And even before the years of coming to Nashville, how you played in all those bar bands and honky-tonks and what we used to call skull orchards with the chicken wire with the beer bottles thrown against them. Those are very important days in any artist's career, and there's a lot to be learned from them.
Certainly, certainly there is. Those days in my career were that's the biggest part of my memory as far as the early days is the night after night grind, you know, the going. And the only reason we did it, the only reason I did it, because, hey, a lot of the guys that were with me are not here nowadays. The only reason I did it was just the real love for the music. I mean, I just loved to sing and play. That was the biggest reason that I was there. I'd say, you know, and I still, you know, still do.
It hasn't changed.
Hasn't changed in that sense at all. It's still a great feeling to get out in front of a good crowd and play, be it 60,000 or 60.
I know that, John. I know you're comfortable with either, and I know people who play big dates like Willie Nelson, yourself, and Charlie Daniels, and George Jones, and Johnny Cash, when they get out in a venue like Jamboree in the Hills or any other big fair date with 20, 30, 40, 50,000 people, it's always nice to kind of go back to a club to reassess your life and get back to the people.
It really is, you know, and again, that's one of our moves for the fall of 85, and we're going back into a lot of the clubs. I don't know, you know, this may be one of the last trips through. Then again, it may just be the beginning of a whole new deal, but I'm going to make it a point to try and get closer to the real roots as far as what the people want to hear and what we can go out there and play for them. That's kind of what I'm into now.
John, I want to thank you for taking time out here at Jamboree in the Hills, and thank you for joining us here, and I think you're probably one of the finest guys I've ever been associated and known in country music, and wish you all the very best in the future with many, many more years of success.
Oh, Lee, thank you. I do appreciate that, and it's certainly a pleasure to be on your show. Speaking of someone that's done an awful lot for country music, I think you're him, and we do appreciate that, too.
Thank you, John.
And there's our visit with a true original, John Anderson. Join me next week when we'll sit down with Miss Dynamite personality, K.T. Oslin. Until then, Lee Arnold reminding you to stay safe and keep it country.